Right. Main event. Item four. Good morning. This is going to be a review of total portfolio performance for the period ending September 30th, 2025. Otherwise, it is Q3.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So I figured since this is my last seating with y'all, I'd take the next hour and a half to
absolutely
go over my report.
I budgeted two, so take all of
them. Yeah, I bet you did. Very good. So I'm going to start. Well, not do that. On slide 7 on the hard copy, and I believe it's slide 44 or 50 on your electronic copy. So as I like to do, I'm going to review the market landscape, talk a little bit about where we are and where we've been and where we're going, and then I'll briefly cover performance. So the big pieces that have been going on are the shutdown and the delay of economic data that's been released. So shutdown lasted 43 days. It went from October 1st to November 12th. And the data that was missing was a lot of employment data from the BLS, GDP and income data, inflation data, home sales, retail sales. So everything that economic prognosticators and the Fed use to sort of figure out what's going on and make policy and recommendations was not there. So there'll probably be a little bit of a permanent hole, but now that things are back in line and things are working again, data is going to be coming through. There's a number of economic pieces of data that are coming out tomorrow, and you know, that helps the Fed get their act together and figure out what they're going to do with rates, and things should continue along smoothly. As of September, so that was the last inflation point we had, year-over-year inflation was running slightly hotter than expected, around 3%, both core and top-line inflation at 3%. The rate has increased slightly, but, you know, sort of still in line with where it's been going and still above the Fed target of 2%. Equities have rallied over the quarter, so the shutdown didn't really slow things down from an equity perspective, and equities rallied really on the fact that the Fed had begun to pivot and lower rates, strong earnings, and a reasonable economic outlook. Interestingly, despite the lack of data that's been coming through, the Fed and the Fed's projection of how economic activity is going came in strong. It was the Atlanta Fed forecast came in at 3.9% at the end of the quarter, and the latest print was at 4.1%. So the Fed is thinking that economic activity is remaining strong. That sort of doesn't really bode great for more rate cuts coming in, the next one potentially coming in December. And the market is pricing in a rate cut at about 50%. So they're thinking that maybe the Fed will reduce by 25 basis points, kind of a toss of the coin. Thinking about fixed income and where Treasury rates are, as of 11/17, a couple days ago, the Treasury rate was at 4.13. At the beginning of the year, it was 4.52, so rates have come down, and that's been sort of a tailwind to the market as well. The high throughout the year was 4.79, and the low was 3.86, so a big sort of variation in Treasury rates through the year, and that has, the drop in rates has sort of helped to propel equity and risk markets. Let me turn to the next slide. I want to talk about is all the way back on the back of this deck before we get to performance on the hard copy on page 46. And this wall of numbers I like to show to make some points about where the trends have been. The real interesting thing this quarter on this chart is that the numbers are almost all black. If you look at the left side of the page, they are all black. Those are all the equity numbers around the globe across all periods. I do not remember seeing this condition on this page in my history of this industry of 24 years. So this is sort of unique in that we've had very strong markets really since the global financial crisis in the equity market with just a couple of pullbacks. Couple of trends to look at that I've pointed out before. If you look at the top left-hand table and the right column, the 10-year column, you can see that S&P 500 over the last 10 years, 15.3% return on an average annualized basis. That is, extraordinary over 10-year periods. Typically what you would expect is sort of in the 9 to 10% range. And then a couple of market trends that we're seeing that I've talked to you about before, the whole growth versus value. And you can see that in that same column going down to the style index section where you see the Russell 1000 growth versus the Russell 1000 value, 18.8% versus 10.7%, right? So there was a little bit of a reversal early in the year in the April timeframe, but growth has come back strong and continues to outperform value, largely because of that, the Magnificent Seven and the whole AI tech boom that's been going on. The second trend is you take your finger up a little bit in that same column, the Russell 1000 versus the Russell 2000, so large cap versus small cap trend has continued. And again, over that 10-year period, 15% versus 9.8%, a big difference on an average annualized basis. And then the last one is domestic and international. So compare that 15.3% S&P, the top line in that chart, same column, and then you take your finger down to the next chart below, the international equity chart, second row there, the MSCI ACWI XUS at 8.2%. So domestic, 15.3, everything except US, 8.2, big dispersion there. A lot of those huge differences in those indexes, you just don't see over most extended periods. And so the US large cap tech has been really leading the day and driving everything. So it's that concentration in US large cap tech. If you now take your eyes over to the year to date column, the third column of numbers from the left, those same trends have continued, except for, interestingly, international has come back and outperformed the U.S. this year pretty handily. So that S&P 500 versus the MSCI ACWI XUS in the next table, 14.8% versus 26%. International came back strong, largely because of the fall in the dollar, the decline in the dollar. So that decline in the dollar, which is off about 9 to 10% since the beginning of the year, has really put a tailwind behind international stocks for U.S. investors. And that's been a good contributor to your portfolio returns. Lastly, on this page, I'll take you over to the fixed income, the table on the upper right-hand portion. A lot of black there as well. The only one detractor from that whole table has been long-term treasuries, right? So things that are exposed to just rates, not credit, not risk, just rate movements. And as you know, rates have come up, they've stabilized. And so you see the year-to-date, month, quarter-to-date, and year-to-date returns are good and strong and at a higher level than they have been in a long time as rates have, you know, sort of stabilized and normalized in that 4% or so range. And credit has continued to be sort of an extraordinary performer as defaults and problem credits have remained very low. One more point I want to make before we move on to performance is on the private equity page, going back a few pages to page 43 on the hard copy. And the point here is one I've made before, but one that I think is impacting the overall portfolio here, and that's that, you know, the commitment to private equity for you guys in the functionally focused portfolio and private assets in general is pretty high. And private equity has not beaten the really screaming public equity markets for quite some time. And that is that concentration in the Mag 7, the large cap growth stocks. Private equity hasn't kept up. And you can see that with these three you know, red numbers on the tops of the top chart. Over 3 years, a broad basket of private equity, direct private equity has underperformed the public markets, the Russell 3000, by 6.2% on an average annualized basis. So you would expect 200-400 basis points of outperformance on a year-over-year basis in private markets, in private equity. You just haven't seen that really going back 5 years. You can see the longer term 10 and 20 year numbers have been as expected, but recently they just haven't been able to outperform public markets.
Any prognostication on when we might see a breakthrough, a change in
that? Yeah. Well, I mean, I can tell you what the conditions are, right? It's really been driven by the rise in rates, which is, you know, a leveraged investment that's paying more for that leverage is getting hurt by that. And it's been driven by a comparison to the Mag 7, right? So if either one of those conditions change, you would expect private equity to pull ahead again. And then also just sort of if things stabilize, you would expect private equity to show more strongly relative to the public equity markets. Because if you think about what private equity is, it's really just sort of hyperactive public markets investing. And by that I mean, you know, the managers, they go in, they buy a company, hyperactive and sort of concentrated. They buy a company that they really like, they change it, they improve it, and then they sell it back, right? And so they're doing what public managers do, except on a more concentrated and more active level. And so, you know, if strength broadens from just the highly concentrated Mag 7 and tech, and if rates fall and that helps the funding of the leverage, those two things would be a real tailwind. But stabilization ought to help as well.
It's the exit strategy, right? That is creating the bottleneck, right? There isn't a, I mean, I guess it's a combination of rates and other factors, but there's not the favorable exit that allows people, because they're certainly putting money in.
Yeah, just because the valuations have been bad and the managers are like, well, yeah, we don't want to sell when valuations are bad and, you know, mark down the book and lose money. So and the liquidity hasn't been there.
So we hold.
You hold?
We hold. Okay.
As you would expect to do in this asset class. Yeah. okay, so if there are no more questions on the market environment, I'm going to move on to performance. And take you to, let's see, let me get my stuff in order here. I'm going to take you to slide 46. Is that right? No, sorry, past that. I'm going to take you to slide 49. And so it's a positive story this quarter. You guys have, with the big rising markets, you guys have risen as well. And you can see on this slide, looking at the table at the top of the page, you started the quarter with $12.2 billion, net cash flow of $242 million, and net investment change of $500 million. So you ended up as of September 30 with almost $13 billion. And you can see similarly on a year-to-date basis with a quarter to go left in your all's fiscal year, started with 11.8. You know, really nothing there in terms of cash flow, very neutral cash flow, and a total increase in these strong markets of $1.2 billion, getting to that same nearly $13 billion at the end of the third quarter. Moving forward a couple of pages just to do a quick governance check of where you are relative to your policy. You can see your allocation versus your current target policy, the table on the upper right-hand portion of the page, and you are largely in line with policy targets. So just essentially check that box. And then moving to performance on the next page, you know, strong total fund performance so far this year with a quarter left. You can see the two columns. So this is net of fees. We're going to look at gross of fees in a moment when we move to managers. But this is net of fees. So you can see the total fund for the quarter, very strong, 4.1%. Year to date with a quarter left, 10.1%. Very slightly underperforming your implementation benchmark for the quarter and very slightly outperforming for the year to date. One point I want to make here is the correlation that text note there in the white space. So correlation between growth and diversifying, which is a big point of having that diversifying portfolio, has come in at 0.51, 0.56, and 0.56 respectively over 1, 3, and 5 years. This is definitely improving. And you think about a year ago, I looked back at the performance report from a year ago, those numbers were 0.81, 0.6, and 0.66. You want better correlation, which means lower correlation between growth and diversifying. That's, I think, largely attributable to shifting up the diversifying portfolio, putting in treasuries, and putting in a trend-following strategy. So that's moving in the right direction. So turning to the next page, this is really, this is kind of the slide I go to first when I review this report to see at a very high level what's been driving performance. And you can see here, you know, although the scale, you look at the scale on the chart on the left-hand side of the page, the bars look big, the numbers are very small, but this explains what happened in the quarter. And you can see that it's going to be between, you know, did your managers do all right? That's the selection aspect of this and the green portion of those bars. Or is it because you were over or under allocated to, you know, good or bad parts of your strategic asset allocation? And you can see here that selection really drove this at the total fund level, although again the scale is and the size of the bars are a little bit misleading. There was a slight beneficial allocation in liquidity and diversifying, and then the story here on this page is showing growth selection was negative. And so, you know, this gives you a high level snapshot, and you can then start asking questions. Okay, well, let's dig a little bit deeper. And so that's what we will do now. And I'm going to take you to more numbers pages, back to 55. So here we were looking at net of fees before. Here we're looking at gross of fees. And that is only so that we can compare managers to other managers in the same asset class on an apples-to-apples basis. And so you can see how your managers did here relative to the benchmark and then relative to other managers of their same style. And so you can see in the growth portfolio, you can see in domestic equity overall did quite strong for the quarter, 8.8 versus 8.2, 60 basis points ahead of the benchmark, and ranking very high for other equity managers, right, for all equity managers in the second percentile. So domestic equity did well. Your active managers, Boston Partners and Emerald Advisors, did very well. Ceradex was a drag in terms of active management, but that's understandable given their quality bias. Moving to the next page, international equity is where there were some challenges for your active managers. If you look on this page, you can see just two of your active managers outbeat their benchmarks. Although looking far to the right, the column that says since inception, almost all your active managers have beat since you've had them. The quarter was difficult. The two that outperformed are TT, your emerging markets manager, which was nice to see, given that they've had some challenges lately. They actually came back pretty strong in this quarter. And then First Eagle, the one down at the bottom, outperform pretty handily, and they actually can invest in gold in their portfolio. And if you've been following the financial markets, you know that gold has just sort of been taking off like a rocket, one of the best performing asset classes since year to date. And then the other managers have struggled, notably Pierford and William Blair in your international equity space. You know, Pierford tends to outperform in down markets. They have good downside protection, and this has been a ripping market, and they have not kept up. So something to keep an eye on there. Moving to the next part of the growth portfolio on the next page. And so, you know, this is sort of everything else except equity. You've got private credit in here and public credit, multi-asset credit, real estate, and private equity. Private credit, actually credit in general, has been a good contributor to your portfolio. You can look at those two rows in the top blue area there, and you can see that both private credit and your public credit have done well for you. And the credit markets in general have been strong. Your new allocation to multi-asset credit has been good out of the gate, although obviously since August 25, way too early to tell, but it's nice to see good performance out of the gate. You can see the since inception numbers over on the right-hand side of that section, strong performance relative to benchmarks. And then looking down that page a little bit is your other new asset allocation, and a similar story there, real estate debt, very strong out of the gate. Looking at the since inception numbers there, 4.7 to 2.9, March 2025, you know, not much of a representative sample there, but you like to see positive out of the gate versus negative. And then, you know, real estate and private equity have not done great. Your private markets there, particularly private real estate, we are seeing, you know, a little bit of a turnaround in that market, and you can see that as the numbers get better up to the three-month point where you're down just about 1%, but certainly trending in the right direction. And then private equity, you know, reasonable absolute returns, but when you compare it to, let's just take a look at those numbers, that private equity row there, 10.7% of your portfolio, 2.8% for the quarter, year to date, 6.7, 1 year, 7.8. That 1 year number for the S&P 500 was 17.6%, right? So that just sort of shows you how private equity has not really kept up to public markets equity, which is really apropos to Chair Gordon's question. Moving on to the next page, diversifying and liquidity. Yes, please.
On private equity, the returns, is that based on distributions, or is that based on value of the assets?
So it's all of it. It's all of it. Okay. Everything is counted in there. Does that answer the question? I can go into detail about how it's calculated, but it includes everything.
Okay.
Right. Yeah. Okay. So diversifying liquidity, they've really been continue to plug along, sort of achieving their objectives and meeting expectations. The diversifying portfolio, you can look for the year-to-date number, 5.1%, 100 basis points over the benchmark. Every component of the diversifying portfolio for the quarter has done well, and I particularly want to draw your attention to the bottom mandate in that section, the BHDG systematic or trend following strategy. This one struggled out of the gate, right? You can see the since inception number there, negative 10.3, underperforming even its negative 8.4 benchmark. So this trend following strategy had a lot of trouble this year, given the volatility and the changes in market direction. But since things have stabilized, they're starting to do what they're supposed to do in a market that you would expect. 5.5 for the quarter versus 5.3 for their benchmark. And I think Tim was telling me that up through the end of October, they're actually positive on a year-to-date basis. So it's good to see the turnaround there. And that, by the way, has helped with that correlation benefit for the diversifying sleeve. And then liquidity is essentially doing what it's supposed to be doing. And that concludes my prepared comments, Mr. Chair.
All right. Are there questions or comments for Scott on the presentation? Quiet group today. Well, let me, before you run off, let me just say a few words. We've had a remarkable run when I think about it. I was thinking about that yesterday and last night. 2014, right? I think it was 2014 we started.
Yes.
And I first had seen you at a Caliper's presentation, then with Words, which would have been in 2013, I think. We've had a remarkable run, and I know I speak for everybody here in wanting to extend our appreciation for the work, for Varis's work, your work, Andy's work. Seeing Ed at Sackers made me remember that we went through Brexit. We've been through a lot of things together, right? We've been through Brexit. We've been through the fun of COVID. All of that's been a remarkable run, but maybe most notably the role that Varis had in the development of the FFP, right? That's a significant milestone along the way of this journey. So I certainly want to say, and others are welcome to speak, but I want to extend our appreciation and gratitude, and thank you for your work.
Well, thank you. I've been really proud of the innovative work that we've done with the board and staff over the last 10 years, and it has been my pleasure to serve you all. And Danny asked me to express those exact same sentiments, so thank you very much.
Yeah, it was a guy, Dan and I were talking, I think it was Wednesday at Sackers, and we got a chance to say hello to Danny. He came up and said hello and chatted for a few minutes, so it was great to see him.
That's great. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Hey.
I'm going to stick around through Tim's presentation and then the fee presentation, and then I'll...
Okay. Thank you, Scott.
Hold on a second, Greg. We'll get the CIO report first. All right. I'll be brief with the CIO report here. There's a couple things I want to highlight for the board. I just echo Scott's comments that we continue to see the risk assets continue to rebound in the third quarter coming off the Liberation Day turmoil back in April. What's been nice to see is that broaden out a bit. So yes, the Magnificent Seven are still driving things, but we've seen U.S. small cap come back, particularly small cap growth. We've seen international come back, and emerging markets, which has been a dog for a long period of time, really come back and be the strong performer on a year-to-date basis. So that smaller allocation that we recommitted to last year has paid off this year. It's really good to see. I think the other notable thing is in the private markets, although they're lagging the public markets, we are seeing the green shoots come back in private equity. So we're seeing that positive rate of return where we saw flats to negatives for a couple of years there. 2021, you'll recall, was a huge year for private equity. We're up 60%. Well, when you get a 60% year, you've either, there's been pent-up demand that's been released, or you've drawn from the future. In this case, I think we drew from the future. We had a lot of activity in 2021. 22, 23, and even 24 were pretty muted. You know, this year up, not get into the double digits, but high single digits. I'm going to continue to call that green shoots. It is a bright direction, but we know there's more work to be done there. And Stepstone will be here at the next board meeting and go over private equity, so we'll have a chance to dive into that a little bit more, particularly into how they're thinking about the exit environment and that landscape across different types of funds. Real estate continued to lag with the recent change to add real estate to the Stepstone mandate. We're anticipating they're going to be doing their full review in the first quarter, have something in front of the investment committee and board kind of in the second quarter of next year in terms of a game plan to address where we're allocating, how much we're allocating, that sort of thing on that front. And against this backdrop this quarter, we did make the initial allocations both to U.S. Treasury within the diversifying program and multi-asset credit. We funded four mandates back in July, August, and September. So a lot of activity kind of going on behind the scenes here. And then most of you have met Kat Zhang, who joined us in July. She's been working on a review of the risk diversifying program. She's gonna be presenting her findings and recommended actions at the next board meeting as well. So with that, let's turn to slide three. Nothing really new here. You're used to hearing me saying liquidity is working, growth is working in an absolute sense, but our diversified program is lagging a public markets only benchmark, and risk diversifying is you know, the challenge there, and that's on the docket for the next board meeting. So a little bit deeper dive into the liquidity program itself. You know, the theme here with the rates coming back up, we're getting paid on this portion of I know this was a perennial topic about how much we have in short-term liquidity, particularly when rates were low. Now the rates have come up. We're getting paid in the, you know, in the 4.5 to 5% range over the past year here. That's a nice baseline that we can build from there, especially when our discount rate is 6.75. So if we're getting 5% off short duration, you know, the rest of the portfolio has a relatively lighter lift to go from there. That is trending down as we get rate cuts, but the rate cut environment is a little murky. As Scott said, there's about a 50% chance of a rate cut in December. The market's pricing in about 3 rate cuts between now and the end of 2026. I think that's a little aggressive, but we'll see what comes to pass. With the growth portfolio, the story of the U.S. equity rebound off April continued in the third quarter. I think we're mostly seeing green up here. The notable issue is on Ceridex, so small cap value. Quality dividend value is just really not keeping up. My team's been doing some work on that. We've been in conversations with Makita around some courses of action, but expect to hear more from that in the near term. If you look at performance, I think, you know, as I touched on earlier, private equity continues to come back. Again, not keeping up with those extraordinary public market returns, but coming back. Private credit chugging along, kind of doing exactly what we expected to do, low double-digit returns. I think this is the perennial topic of conversation of when does private credit get in trouble? Well, not yet is the answer. So it has been a remarkably stable investment that we've had, you know, a very large allocation to relative to some of our peers, and that continues to really work. Real estate is the laggard. Yes?
On private credit, can you talk a little bit about, I mean, because we're talking about the potential bubble and private credit and so forth, but I mean, being broad asset class, the type of private credit that we're invested in, I think you would say it's a higher quality, more stable type of investment than what else is out there, what's been being chased and so forth.
Yeah, and so certainly we have seen a couple of headlines recently of private credit deals that went bad. They went bad on fraud. And it was two deals that certain firms had a relatively significant exposure to. We did not have significant exposure, any exposure to those. So with our separately managed accounts, what we're able to do via StepStone is go out and set the lending terms, set the leverage level, and kind of screen out certain industries. So to date, that has worked well. It is a more conservative posture than the market writ large. The bulk of our exposure right now is still direct lending, so lending to privately held companies. We have launched down the path of expanding into asset-based lending, so having a hard asset back it up versus just a corporate credit. That's about a year and a half into our exposure there. That also is working well, so I think the conservative nature of this, that we're still getting low double-digit returns, has served us well to date. I think that's something we have to continually take a look at. Where is the market evolving to? Where are terms with StepStone? Are we still positioned correctly? We do take a look at that at least once a year, in reality, probably every couple of months, to see how the market's evolving, but we're still comfortable with kind of the current posture there. With that, I did just want to highlight a few things that came up last quarter on personnel changes that are continuing to evolve here. So just a reminder, with William Blair, there's a CEO change and a portfolio manager change. So Stephanie Braming, CEO of William Blair, retiring at the end of this year. Ken McAtamney is one of our 3 portfolio managers on our account. He's retiring the beginning of next year. So we've already kind of underwrote the new portfolio manager team. Simon Fennell, who's been on the account for 8 years, I think, continues to be on there. So he's our point of continuity, but with some things to take a look at there. We've met with them in Chicago and London both. Cautiously optimistic, but they're having some performance challenges, so we'll watch on that one. With Boston Partners, Mark Donovan is retiring April of 2026. Mark has been on forever, 20-plus years, and they're rolling on to two new portfolio managers who have been on since 2006 and 2016 are going to carry forward, so there's a lot of continuity there. With PIMCO, one of our portfolio managers, Chris Brightman, is still on a medical leave of absence. Rob Arnott continues to manage that strategy. And the last piece that happened recently was this CEO change at TT International. So Eric McKay, who had been there for a dozen years, leading that firm, announced in August he was going to be handing off to Luke Poulter. They spent 3 months doing the handoff. Luke has been there even longer than Eric, so it looks like good continuity there. We'll be meeting with Luke in the future, but you know, with the CEO changes, it's a little bit more distant from the actual portfolio. We keep an eye on them, but they're not typically as impactful. So with that, let's turn over to page 9.
So before you run on, and mindful that we're in a, you know, in a public space, in a public meeting, any thoughts on the general likelihood of material events producing change in the portfolio?
Well,
general question.
I just read off 5 personnel changes. It would be unlikely that all 5 would result in no changes. So I think there are several portfolios that we are re-underwriting. My staff and Makita both will be taking a look at structure. You know, where are we exposed to? Do we have any unintended bets or deficits in the portfolio? And on a rotating basis over the upcoming year, you know, I would expect to see, like, you know, we need to add here, we need to remove something here. You'll see the trims and adds coming through next year.
Maybe, and it sounds like the 3rd is looming to be a fairly significant agenda. I think it's the only meeting we have in December, yes. But I was trying to figure out a way, and it may not be appropriate for the 3rd, but to have a discussion about how we as a board can get a little greater visibility into that without affecting decision making. In other words, that seems very important, and I don't know if we can get visibility to that.
Yeah, I think we can do that in January. Makita is going to be coming back with the results of the risk analysis, and that's going to inform a little bit of a refinement of the work plan for 2026. That work plan will involve asset class reviews, portfolio reviews. You couple that with the fact that our internal risk system is coming online and we're starting to get more visibility in our portfolio. I would anticipate particularly the most pressing is going to be in the risk diversifying, where we see, like, we've already identified some deficits, which we'll talk about the next board meeting. That'll start happening in the first quarter. I think on the equity side, first quarter, second quarter, we'll be having some more conversations around that.
Okay.
And on the risk diversifying, on page 9 here, AFL-CIO and LLCAR both had good years. BHDG got off to that rough start, as Scott mentioned, kind of turned it around in the quarter and is now positive year to date. We did add the treasury allocation with DFA after the end of or during the quarter here, and you know, too soon to tell. That's a brand new. And then on page 10 here, you know, this is a quarter by quarter analysis of the simple target index versus our total fund return over the past several years. The takeaway here is there have been very few negative quarters. This is a portfolio that's built for more defense. It's built to kind of ride through. As we put on our website, we don't expect to capture all the highs, but we don't expect to suffer all the lows either. There just hasn't been a lot of chances to test that defensiveness. With only 3 down quarters and modestly down quarters over the past 3 years. But this quarter, with the markets up, the index up, we did have stronger participation on an upside capture ratio. And with that, I can pause there and see if there's any trustee questions.
Any questions? Okay. It's a quiet group today.
All right.
Great. Tim, real quick, I'm sorry. The simple target. Is that the range of results for the, you've got broader. I'll ask you.
Okay, well, just real quickly, the simple target index, this basically gives a simple, gives a single public markets benchmark to each one of the growth, diversifying, and liquidity allocations. So saying, if you implement this in the simplest possible way, what would that benchmark have looked like?
Yeah. Any other questions, comments? I'm not seeing any, so thank you. Look forward to meeting on the 3rd. Sounds interesting.
It'll be robust.
Yeah, robust. There's a good word for it. All right. We're going to